Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Through here you get to travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me as always is my co-host Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is our After Midnight. It is an After Midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut porn or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult content and language. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And tonight, we are going to be delving into reading and commenting on poetry inspired by the photography of Man Ray. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
Hey, what's up? All right.
Hey. All right. I am doing good. You know, as always, looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets, reading and commenting on poetry. I have to say, I wish I kind of had a little more time to read about Man Ray. Like, I know his work because I've seen it before, and I like the surrealism of it. I just don't know a whole lot about him. I don't know. Do you know anything about him?
He was a contributor with Dada and Surrealism, but he wasn't a huge part of the ties were kind of so-so, so to speak.
Right.
He liked a different media, but he considered himself a painter. He thought you can paint with a camera. You there is a nice way of rolling out light and shade to get that image that you want.
Absolutely, absolutely. He really did seem to be very groundbreaking when it came to photography. And as you said, using it as a way of painting, as creating an art with shade and light. And I, you know, I would be interested. It would be interesting to find out exactly who was the first, whether he was the first or there was somebody else before him who delved into the realm of surrealism when it comes to photography.
I don't know.
I mean, because it's completely possible considering how long cameras have been around, although at first they were obviously people were required to hold still, but that would definitely be something really cool to look into. I'm a big fan of his work and his use of light and shade, and I'm definitely looking forward to tonight. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on a couple of guests. First, I'd like to say, welcome, Laurent. Glad you could join us. How's it going? Are you on mute already, Laurent?
No better way to start the evening, right? Set the mark.
What?
Good evening, Pam. Good evening, Rex. How are you, my friends?
Good. What's up?
Good.
What's up? What's down? What's inside out? Okay, you know, every day we find out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'd also like to welcome Kel to the show. Welcome, Kel. Glad you could join us.
Glad to be here.
And
hey,
how
Kel.
Are you doing?
I'm getting a little bit sleepy, but I think I can hang in for a little while.
Awesome. I'm glad. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and put the first poem up, and that is Eigenlicht by Prufrock. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Eigenlicht by Prufrock. In night, you bear no resemblance to yourself. Either I've forgotten the darkened parts of you, or I dodged them like a wooden exposure. You manage to brush against my own shadow, smudging it darker, snagging its threads, and tearing a tempting throat into an abysmal shade. I cannot see here. My teeth grind and they irritate me. But as you remember your touch to me, here in yellow, my neon cross-hatching flares, then pops. I am become an after-image, a melanistic glyph. Mark the time, pressed for life. I could stain an eye for you, or we could love as twilight fought by stars. In darkness, I bear no resemblance to myself. Reduced to eyes on a pendulum behind time's own face. I dream for days throughout your lovely night. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. Now, I will let everyone know this was not written for our contest. It was written for a contest on The Shade of Black, but Prufrock had shared it with us, said, you know, I was, you know, thinking, you know, he really liked Man Ray and said he'd been thinking about his photography when writing this. And, you know, I read through it and I not only liked it as a poem, but I really felt like that it did work. There were lines that worked really well with paying tribute to the artwork of Man Ray's photography. And so therefore I thought it would make a wonderful intro poem for this show, you know, especially with lines like, I am become an after image, a melanistic glyph. And let's go ahead and start with you, Lauren. Your thoughts.
I thought this was a terrific piece. Fascinated with the language, really. In night, you bear no resemblance to yourself. Either I've forgotten the darkened parts of you, or I dodged them like a wooden exposure. And the lines you managed to brush against my own shadow, I cannot see here. I could stain an eye for you. It's a very poetic lines that all bear on the darkness, metaphorically, of course, but possibly also in real life. Reduced to eyes on a pendulum behind time's own face, I dream for days throughout your lovely night. It really takes the darkness and transforms it very neatly. Love it.
Oh, absolutely. Well said there. And Kel, your thoughts.
What is that phrase by Pablo? I love you without knowing why. This is beautiful. But, well, I have, you know, issues, you know. I am become an after image and melangistic, I can't see it, glyph. I like that. I don't know why, but I like it. After image is, you know, like a photograph, someone taking a picture, but, you know, when the light flashes, you get these sparkles or whatever, you know? And that's kind of what I get from that part. Otherwise, I'm going to go with what Rex and Lawrence say or anybody else, because...
I think that was a wonderful comment. You know, and... Yep, you're right. Some poetry, you just have to pull a Pablo Neruda and say, I love you because, and that's it. So well
yep.
said there.
I love you and without knowing why.
Without knowing why, exactly. Exactly. I like
yeah.
that. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, you got to start with the title, which means natural light, as opposed to a black, which he's writing upon, and that starts with the film itself. It's kind of a blank angle contained within a black sphere to keep it from being exposed until you open up the shutter itself, which hits on that thought. Either I've forgotten the darkened parts of you, or I dodged them like I would an exposure. It hits on the process in the dark room itself, because he hits on those tempting through into that abysmal shade. There's the process that walks in it, the steering yell in my neon cross hatching flares, then pops. That's the idea of taking a picture in the, well, near darkness, the flash. I like the melanistic glyph. It offers up that thought with the darker parts. You expose something to let the light in, but the melanistic glyph is still the darker parts within that shot itself. I could stain an eye for you. That's it's kind of a how in the process you let in as much as you want of the shading to produce the effect you want, so to speak. In darkness, I bear no resemblance to myself, obviously, because there is no. No real thought, because there's nothing to capture in the moment without something to offset the dark itself. Reduced eyes and a pendulum behind time's own face. I dream for days throughout your lovely night. That's the offering of understanding the darkness itself and knowing the cue to bring the light in, the phase, the shift, the angle, anything that gives you that little touch to exposure angles that draws attention to that which you're trying to offer up as a retrospect, whether it be itself the, say, a white, like the outline of an image you can expose and just have the outline itself, and you know what the image is, but you don't have the real picture of it.
I like that thought. I like that thought. That's some wonderful observations there. Yeah, I thought this was just a wonderful light, and the whole idea, you know, to me of like that you know, the things that can be hidden in the dark. And I really like, I am become an after image, the whole idea of being somebody, almost like an afterthought of something, you know, that's just left behind. Marked for time, pressed for life, I would could stain an eye for you, or we could love as twilight taught by stars. I like the whole idea of, you know, the way the stars brighten up the twilight. There's such a wonderful, like, intermingling of light and dark within in this poem. It's an excellent write and very well done. All right, let's see what we got next. All right, Dan. Lauren, I've put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
By all means. I actually changed the title on this to Fingerprints Are Facile. Hands marked in black cast such strange shadows. We grease our palms with the oddest of causes, a rank hill to die upon. Our beds are old, the sheets are cold. There is no lashing to the mast across the rocky seas of blanket and pillow. Odysseus's sirens have taken the head, Charybdis the foot, torn between ecstasy and horror. Nights of tunnel vision, bright horizons are all about the past. Time has come a cropper, belligerent and deadly. Nightmares have caught too much wind, catching a stinging flurry of ice like needles that sew insides. These are no days of wine and roses, but scented hours ripened sour with the fragrance of an old enemy. We are each other's death, crawling down throats to the bellows of life, sucking, gasping, spiraling thick to a certain choking, because a mask offended your freedom to die. You have your wish, souls unrestrained by vaccine clarity, departing now at your local ICU. Fingerprints are facile, the breadcrumbs easy to follow, not yet stale. End poem.
Great read, Lawrence. I really like that you went with this prompt and all that you got from it. Very cool there. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
Alright, you've shaded your thoughts of the picture inside, offering up the stark with the dark, so to speak. Grease our palms, the rocky seas, Odysseus' sirens have taken the head, Charybdis the foot, form between ecstasy and horror, night depth, tunnel vision, bright horizons are all about the past. You worked that all from that picture itself, which was a nice touch to offering up the exposure itself. And there were, wine and roses? I can't tell. But I'm figuring that's a rose lying on the table. It's not that clear because it's very dark. But that was I like that thought. But scented hours are ripe and sour with the fragrance of an old enemy. We are each other's death, falling down our throats. There's a stark reality to the color and the vividry of the voice that is ripped through. So you offer up that black and white. It offers hope and it offers darkness, but it also offers the stark reality of that which the picture represents, the comparisons between the light angles and the dark angles, to offer up a dynamo of thought.
Thank you, my friend.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, well said there, Rex. And Kel, your thoughts.
Well, I love you.
Did you want to say anything more about the poem? Or okay, all right. I will go ahead and.
I'm sorry, honey. I must have bumped the button.
Okay. I thought.
Oh my God. That's okay. I tried to call my dad
like,
a little
bit
ago.
Okay, that was short and sweet.
And
I'm not
going
to put her. Okay. All right. Well, yep, go ahead.
I was going on to this nautical bit. There is no lashing to the mast across the rocky seas of blanket and pillow. it kind of made me think of it. I've had a couple requests to continue on with one that I had written for another contest about the skull. And so I was just thinking, so when he was reading that, I said, oh my goodness, I gotta use that. I've had a couple people ask me to request to continue, and I do believe Laurent was one of them. So thank you for the idea. yeah, I like the imagery. And the wording that you put into this is absolutely fantastic. It's beyond me, as usual, but it is awesome. So there you go.
Thank you.
Great comment. Yeah, I really liked the imagery and the metaphors in this. I like how you grasp so much out of a photograph that really doesn't have a lot of objects in it. The Odysseus's sirens have taken the head, what was a powerful line, and also, let's see, a rank hill to die upon, our beds are old, the sheets are cold, there's no lashing to the mast across the rocky sea of blanket and pillow. I like how you went with the across the rocky sea of blanket and pillow, as if our own homes are no longer even safe. And I did also like these are no days of wine and roses, because it worked well as a reference to the poem. I forget the poet. I remember we had a show featuring his poetry. But that's a poem of such hope. The days of wines and roses, as Rex had mentioned, hope. That poem in itself, it's filled with such a kind of sense of hope, of peace, of how joyful and a life can be. But as you point out, these are not those days. Those days are past, or maybe they'll be someday in the future. I always also really liked to the bellows of life sucking gas and spiraling thick to a certain choking. That's just a visceral imagery that really hits hard. Catching a stinging flurry of ice like needles that sew inside. Anybody who's been in the really cold weather and with snowing and that cold air hits you hard, and it does. And I like how the whole idea of needles sewing the inside, as if it is a pain that you have absolutely no control over, and it just repetitively happens over and over again. So excellent right there, Lawrence, and very well done.
5 stars, Pam, 5 stars.
All right. I will put those in my star book that I collect my stars in. All right.
Thanks.
And absolutely, I'm glad you were inspired. And up next, we have your poem, Cal. So go ahead and give it a refresh, please.
Okay, this one's a little short and sweet. Captured in Glass. Marilyn was eternally lovely. sinfully sensual, playfully naughty, childlike joyous life Marilyn Monroe was and will always be known as, starlet, loved by many, essentially young, existing in crystal, posed as in life, she was a living doll, now captured in glass forevermore. End poem.
Wonderful brevity there, Kel. And I have to say bravo on the shaping of the poem to reflect the shaping of the prompt, the glass within the photograph itself. Very cool there. And let's get you a couple of awesome comments from a couple of awesome guys. And Lawrence, let's start with you.
Yeah. Kel presents us with that mental picture, that visual picture of Marilyn that I think we're all familiar with, that wonderful smile, the curvaceous form, the skirt blowing up over the grate and the look on her face. I mean, those are iconic pictures of Marilyn, and they're very well presented by Kel. She was a living doll, now captured in glass forevermore. Kind of makes me think about that she was always on display, even then, under glass. And I don't think anybody, with the exception of a couple of close friends, may have known the torture and the agony, the emotional duress that she obviously suffered being in the position that she was in. I mean, nobody prepares you ever for that kind of fame, for that kind of adoration. And I think you lose a complete sense of yourself when you're elevated and observed like a living doll captured in glass. Nice job, Kel.
Well said there, Lauren. And
thank you.
And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm kind of dead at the notion of what Marilyn was seen as. Sinfully sensual, playfully naughty, childlike, joyous life. You hit on a note there. That's the one thing she wanted was love and a child. And there had been rumors about something along that line which might have gotten her to where she ended up, which was right now that perfect epitome of thought, because everybody remembers her as she was back then. It never went any further, unfortunately. So I like that image itself.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree that with both of the guys that you really touched really well on Marilyn Monroe, and to do it with just a few lines and with the shaping that you did, I thought was really clever. I thought this worked really well as a tribute to her, as her search and for her search for love, for I like how you use the metaphor of someone captured in glass forever. She was a living doll, now captured in glass forevermore. And I think that really works really well as a metaphor for the whole idea that in our minds, and because of the movies, because of the movies we still watch, because of the pictures we can still find online, she is captured as that eternal beauty. And I also really liked that you described her with this simply sensual, playfully naughty, childlike, joyous life. That you described like the different facets of her, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and just that the beautiful person that she was. So absolutely an excellent write and very well done.
Actually, when I was writing it, I was thinking of the song by Elton John, Candles in the Wind. It was a beautiful tribute to Marilyn. I mean, she was a lovely woman, and she was mistreated. No.
Oh, yes.
Yep. No doubt about that. It was sad and unfortunate. And she was really such a person with a good heart, and she was so much more intelligent than people gave her credit for. And it's just, you know, a shame. And you're right, that song by Elton John and was just a beautiful tribute to her and a wonderful song.
Thank you.
And up next we have Elegant Starlet by Sapphire Rose, and we do have a SoundCloud for that one, so here we go.
Elegant Starlet. Images of you dance across my visual field. Nothing imagined. Everything real. Water pours from eyes. Woeful sighs leave my lips, recalling sweet melodious music as it escapes from the depths of my being. Her seasoned experience is intoxicating, to say the least. Tomorrow hides in the unknown, revel in the experience, make it your own. Material things are just for show, for it's the memories that feed my soul. Wind whispers to all that will listen. She's locked inside her own personal prison. But free she will be. She will be transformed from old to shiny and new. All of us can learn. This musical goddess creates flow. No nerves allowed. Leave that BS at the stage door. Walk on through. The power is yours. End poem.
Great read, Sapphire, thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you write for our shows and you cannot call in, then making a recording with SoundCloud or YouTube is the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this poem.
I like the picture for the multiple superimposed picture on picture based on the singular pose of her standing up and then bending over. I like that picture. Now that hits on that notion with the right in the first images of you dance across my visual field. So it's that slow motion thought. Nothing imagined, everything real. Again, kind of giving one that reference, but you kind of see it like the like you pull out a roll of film and you can watch a single frame by frame by frame as it moves, but you've got that capture right in the singular frame there, and it you get the I'm forgetting now. It's as though you've taken that single frame and expounded on it to the point where now everything revolves around that and what is going on. Recalling sweet melodious music as it escapes from the depth of my being. There's a sense of freedom in that moment. Seasoned experience is intoxicating, to say the least. Tomorrow hides in the unknown, reveling the experience, make it your own. There's a note to of kind of living within that picture, even though it's a one-on-one and offering up two shades. There's a note to actually a freedom in the moment, which is expression of the picture itself.
Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And I have to agree, I really like that photograph also for the way the double exposure gives a sense of movement. And Kel, your thoughts?
I was thinking, I love how she put personality of the woman into this picture. It's just really wonderful how she did that. Her seasoned experience is intoxicating, to say the least. It's just really, really lovely Wind whispers to all that will listen. She's locked inside her own personal prison. It's just a picture. But she put so much image and thought into it. She transforms this picture into something wonderful. Very well done.
Absolutely. And I like that you mentioned that she put personality into the write, because she really did. So well said there. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Yes, ma'am. Her seasoned experience is intoxicating, to say the least. Tomorrow hides in the unknown. Revel in the experience. Make it your own. Material things are just for show, for it's the memories that feed my soul. It's a beautifully written piece, and the poet pinpoints what is important. There's an unlocking of the character in the last lines. She will be transformed from old to shiny and new. It's that coming alive, the transformation that is delivered by the performer for the moment is really well established, because I've seen it before, a performer who seems a bit old and tired but shines on the stage, and as he comes off the stage he doesn't really collapse, but it's slumps from the effort to be what is expected in that moment. I think that's really well established. Great piece.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there is the real sense of transformation in this rite, and as Rex mentioned, a sense of freedom expressed, and I really like how there is a lot of personality in this poem, and this woman just shines because she claims her right to shine. I really like recalling sweet melodies, music that escapes from the depths of my being. Her seasoned experience is intoxicating, to say the least. I like how in that one line she mentions how the music moves her, and then how in the other line, the intoxication of seasoned experience. I thought was just a wonderful thought, in how we can be in awe of someone who has taken life by the horns and just lived it to the fullest and learned from their experience. I also like how she delves into the dark, sad parts of she's locked inside her own personal prison, but free she'll be transformed from old to shiny and new. That whole idea of someone who, it's almost as if it's like a performer who struggles with depression and finds their moments of happiness when they're on that stage, when they're singing for other people. I just think it's absolutely a wonderful write all the way through, and very well done. And
well, that prison is the picture itself, because you look, it's sepia color, so it's an older picture. But the superimposition of one frame upon the other to get the image drawn on, because you don't get the head in the from the first picture, and with the bending over you get the her head turned towards you with a what could be looked upon as a smile in the moment, and then the darkening of the from a waist down offers up a little bit more perspective.
Oh yeah, you're right, that does offer that up. It's really cool that way, the way he uses the shading and to almost use photography, the photograph itself, as a metaphor. And you're right, the turning of the head, it does, because when you can't see the face and the way the body is aligned, you could easily see it looking like somebody who's about to crumble. When she's standing up, but then with the turning, there is that slight smile there that makes you feel as if it's an expression of pulling out of the darkness. I'm glad you brought that up, Rex. Great observation. And Did I put the next one up? No, I did not. Okay. All right. Up next we have Better to Live or Die by Star BG. And another one with a SoundCloud. So let me find that. And where is that? Well, you had it, right? There it is. All right. Here we go.
Better to Live or Die by Star Blossom Goddess. I shall rest better when mind is left to drain against life's drama that plagues soul. I drift alone when world gets intense as broken heart longs for peace from man's betrayal. I be idle better when conquering own demons as concrete walls close in blocking peace. And I shall die alone when choices lead to rest on slab of sleeping death. Death becomes me better as I at gateway lie, the place where peace lives upon slabs of dreams. O sweet death, do come, so draining thoughts plague no more, so life force drains from self as gilded wings sprout to take flight. I be happy to move free, to drift like birds inside the sky. I do fly better now inside new winds, winds that carry me home.
Great read and write there, Star BG. Thank you for the recording. It's very much appreciated. I really enjoyed your choice of background music. And Kel, let's start with your thoughts. Are you on mute, Kel, or did you... there you go.
I'm here, honey. I'm trying to think. I'd like to, she put such a hopeful, sweet, gentle side to death. Oh, sweet death, do come, so draining thoughts plague no more, so life force drains from self, as gilded wings sprout to take flight. It's, you know, it's like a freedom, and, you know, it's just really a beautiful way to express the inevitable to one's life. It's really really beautiful thing. I can't talk. I like it.
Absolutely, and you're right. She does show us how death isn't necessarily something like dying is ugly, but the whole idea of where the spirit that goes afterwards and the way that the once weighted down body of physical limitation can now soar in new ways. You're absolutely right. She did express that just beautifully. And Lawrence, your thoughts.
Yeah, I had a kind of an emotional reaction to this particular poem, and I'm not puzzled by it because it's really well written, but there's a combination of words and a way that they're presented that I guess I can certainly identify with. I shall rest better when mind is left to drain against life's dramas that plagues soul. To me, those are central words that speak a great truth. I mean, who doesn't think better when they're relaxing, allowing us to enter that meditative state? And you do drift along there. You know, when the world gets intense, you seek to escape it and conquer your own demons, which is the next thing, I guess, to I shall die alone, when choices lead to rest on slab of sleeping death. You know, and to me, sleep is what's next to death. And you do lie at its gateway, and it is peaceful. And it will then follow to take that extra step, oh, sweet death to come. So draining thoughts plague no more. There's a real release in sleep that I think we all enjoy. And the concluding lines, I'd be happy to move free to drift like birds inside the sky, are just sweet and beautiful. And when you have gone through that process, that meditative phase, you do feel better. Inside, new winds that carry me home. You've come close. You've approached the finality of your being. But then, of course, you've woken up, and presumably one feels better, refreshed. It's a beautiful piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a wonderful thing when poetry moves us emotionally. And I like that you bring up how it really has that sense of finding. Exactly.
Well, yep. I can't hear
but
that.
But yeah, I like the whole idea of coming to that place of peace, but and also that kind of struggle to get away from the ugliness of life. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, those first four stanzas are a steady progression. I shall rest better. I drift alone. I be idle better. And I shall die alone. Then that fifth stanza takes a different turn. Death becomes me better as I at gateway lie, the place where peace lives upon slabs of dreams. Oh, sweet death, you come, though draining thoughts plague no more, the life force drains itself as guiding wings sprout to take flight. It's that noted turn of thought and voice walks into a kind of Shakespeare realm. It hits on thoughts, especially with the picture. You can hit on Ophelia lying in the pond, or you might get a thought of Juliet offering a bite at the last angle as poison takes its effect. And the carry me home are that final flight. So it is walking into whether to actually, you can take the juxtaposed thought, you can take it either way, better to live or die. But if offering up the thought of living, then, as Laurent said, the idea of sleep being that better place to rid oneself of thought and that which perils is the way to do it, because you wake up fresh. Or if you take the die angle, then it's usually with a draft of poison, which offers up the thoughts of drifting slowly in and then walking into that realm open armed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. I like how you mentioned that, you know, the first few stanzas are a progression. And I did have a whole thought about Shakespeare with those last few stanzas. It really does touch on the whole idea of death and the acceptance of it. It also made me think of that. You remember back in the 1980s, there was that movie, Death Becomes Her? And I can't remember the two women that started, but it was a comedy about two women who just really couldn't stand each other, and they both became, like, zombies. Like, it was kind of a corny movie, but it was also just, like, really fun. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Goldie Hawn. Yeah. I can't remember the other one, though.
Yeah, one of the lady from...
Bloody hell.
Yeah. And I can't remember the other one either. But
Meryl Streep.
What was that?
Meryl Streep was in it.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Funny movie.
Absolutely. But yeah, I thought this was
the... She had one huge gaping hole in the middle of her gut, Meryl Streep.
Yeah,
see right through
it. That was such some excellent dark humor. The poem here, just the way she beautifully describes that longing to escape, to find peace. I really like that. So excellent right here and very well done. All right, and up next we have One Electric Sunset by Diane D, which also has a SoundCloud. And for this one, Rex, I'm going to ask you to read comments, and I'm going to go ahead and push play now.
One Electronic Sunset by Diane D. I gave my coffee cup back to the robot at the drive-thru. In the streets are walking foil mannequins stripped down to an iron-colored fear in a lineup for the needle. The eye of the camera sees the invisible and photographs the image. Electronic subordination. The metal of the microphone hears what to me is silence. Plugged into a wedding on a 14-inch Packard screen, old man nodded at the portable people. War was a cause for prayer or metaphor in my dripping ink. Viral are sins and secrets underneath the glowing choppers. Even those in full metal jackets. TikTok. Electronic on hope streaming on every Wired channel blog. The world shrank to the size of a blue time dashboard screen. Never get caught in a mechanical rainstorm. Push button that sunset and waterfalls on the YouTube download. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much to the SoundCloud. It's greatly appreciated. And Laurent, what did you think? You got a feeling of walking back in time on this?
Well, walking back in time? No,
yeah,
not
like
really.
Anchors?
I had a sense of a future in this, a brief glimpse at a future world. Containing robots to which you return your cup of coffee, which seems a little inefficient given robots and coffee cups these days. But I do catch that sense of a future world wedded to the edge of the envelope in today's world. Everything shrinking down to that screen, that blue time dashboard screen. The phrasing, a mechanical rainstorm, electronic unhope, sins and secrets underneath the glowing choppers. I mean, there's a mix of recent history, the present, and something of the future. The old man nodded at the portable people. That's wonderful. Wonderful phrasing for what he sees on a television. Very impressive piece.
Well, thank you very much. I was referencing that thought with the Packard that had me walking back a bit in time. That's a word you don't often see.
The Packard?
And,
yeah. I was thinking of Hewlett Packard, not the Packard automobile.
Well, I did because she rolled it into a 14-inch plugged into a wedding. So it kind of had me, Because if you look back, even back in time when they were doing the old horror stories, the robot scenes and the black and white, you always got
that long ago.
And Kel, how about you?
Jetsons.
Jetsons.
Actually,
the best.
Please clean up my mess, please. Yes, this is very interesting. I get the sense of a futuristic vibe to it as well. The eye of the camera sees the invisible and photographs the image, electronic subordination. The metal of the microphone hears what to me is silence. Oh, that kind of reminds me of like going up to a drive-thru window, or not the window, but the box that you speak into, you know, and you don't know if anyone really can hear you. You know, you're just talking to air, you know, like, until they, you know, repeat back. You know, this is really an interesting look at our electronic age and what it could end up being. It's very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Kel. I like that thought with the Jetsons and Rosie. Was it Rosie the Robot? Their maid. That was a nice touch. But I did like that second line, walking foil mannequins. You get that image of, disposable clothing. You don't ever have to wash. You just put it in the incinerator, and you take out the next one to put on. The eye of the camera sees the invisible and photographs the image. There is that thought to, the see in the dark camera. Now I can't think, and the film, so they can actually see that which is not visibly in there in the moment, but captures it anyway. Wireless synthesis figures underneath glowing choppers. Boy, has that hit on the thought of all those on the web today that sit there and hide and chew behind their glass. And I like the thought with TikTok, the Full Metal Jacket. What is that bite at tossing bullets at people? All right, Pam, how about you?
Oh, I really liked this one. I like how, well, even the title, One Electronic Sunset, there's such a real, like, to me, an idea. Like, as Kel mentioned, it does seem almost like futuristic, like science fiction, and yet it's very much grounded in reality, how we've allowed machines and online things, like instead of the real sunset, you know, watching the sunset on YouTube, instead of the real waterfall, watching the waterfall on YouTube. Let's see, where is this? I really like the imagery of, in the street there, walking coil mannequins. And I also really like, even those in Full Metal Jacket, TikTok electronic on hope streaming on every wired channel blog. You know, the whole idea that everybody has an opinion and everybody shares it online. You know, that just, I really feel like a lot of this poem speaks on how our humanity is just kind of being slowly peeled away. We allow the internet, the machine, to become a ruling part of life. So, excellent write and very well done. And thank you for leaving comments, Rex. All right. And up next we have our last SoundCloud for the night. Which it's always so nice to get a few of them. And
guys, before you get started on this, I'm going to go ahead and go. I can't hardly keep my eyes open.
I understand that. But you have a good night. Sweet dreams.
You too, Pam. Love y'all.
Bye, Kel.
All right. So, Becoming the Sun by Casey Day. And gotta find that. Here it is.
becoming the sun. I breathe out. Empty sails in my chest flutter like the wings of the butterflies that died in my stomach. Years leave my eyes and fall down my cheeks. I breathe in, but it catches in my throat. I choke on the waves of poison leaving my body. Try to catch my breath. It's escaping like I never could. So I let the flames eat me alive. It's a little much, but I want you to witness as I become the sun. I'll hang myself high above your head, and I'll make you wish that I was dead. When the night leaves goosebumps on your skin, you'll remember the warmth of my touch. It'll be too much. It'll be too much. It'll be too much. It'll be too much.
Great read there, Casey. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, I'd say the offer up was death, but it's more of an offering to haunt. I breathe empty sails, my chest flutter like the wings of the butterflies that died in my stomach. Years leave my eyes and fall down my cheeks, the representation of pain and suffering. And again, the choke, the poison is that offering of letting all that baggage go, but still there is that sense right at the back end, and I'll make you wish that I was dead, that haunting aspect. And then again, the goosebumps and the four, it'll be too much, offers up that note, I will live inside your mind and you won't like it.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, it does have that feel. That's a wonderful observation. And Laurent, your thoughts.
Years leave my eyes and fall down my cheeks. And so I let the flames eat me alive. It's a little much, but I want you to witness as I become the sun. I always appreciate fresh phrasing, combinations of words I haven't seen before. And this poem has some of those elements, and really is a very nice brevity that dangles her temptation above his head like a sickle that's moving forward and back, and hopefully it's going to slice. It'll be too much. It'll be too much. I like the repetition there. I like the veil threat. Great piece.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is a wonderful piece. It really feels like kind of this whole thought of, that almost like you'll regret, you will maybe not regret, but you'll always remember me. But I'm not going to stay as the person you thought I was. I really like the imagery of, so I let the flames eat me alive a little much, but I want you to witness as I become the sun. And the repetitiveness of it'll be too much was also a really strong ending. And tears leave my eyes and fall down my cheeks. I breathe in, but it catches in my throat. I choke on the waves of poison leave my body. Try to catch my breath. I really like how the whole imagery there of someone tried to hold their pain in, and it finally all the pain, all the hurt, everything all the betrayal they've ever felt throughout their life is released in that moment. I think it's a wonderful emotive bright all the way through, and very well done. Yeah.
next, we have Schisma by Time Teller and Rex. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Schisma by Time Teller. They had their plan of operation, fix the kid, but who moderates their belief? Who adjusts to their age, their years of sheltered lives in some cases, years of living in the same place, same school friends into adulthood, same thoughts as their parents, their grandparents? Who moderates their ideals and ideas? Who asks them to answer awkward questions and use their truthful answers against them? Who tolerates their need to compete and show off, thinking they are illustrating or demonstratingly vindictive or simply trying to impress? Impossible to tell. Who, we ask, is behind that? They are the Schisma, all right. And one day I will sing a song that laughs right back at them for their conceited help that was never asked for. And one day their friends rallying to their rescue will see karma in their windscreen, their doctor's surgeries, their dentist, and their loneliness of forlorn love magazine in the bathroom, read in silence, behind his back, but left for all to see. Collusion of Schisma, a green cross code with no backbone to ignore it. Wait till she, the one they asked her, she, wait till she's gone, and down the pills with something tasted, slowly, over time, gently go into the night, and let those other people subpoena you, if they choose to. After all, that's not being angry, is it? They can just let it go, can't they? End quote.
Great read there, Rex. And Laurent, your thoughts?
It's a fascinating piece. I get such a strong sense of a child growing up with parents who manipulate and seek to cast in their own image a child who is kind of resenting that. And they think that when she's gone, things will change for her, but they won't, because she's just waiting, and they can't let it go. It's really a very, very well-written, interesting piece that I would love to read two or three times before I really offer the kind of comment it deserves. It's just fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is one of those pieces that's good to delve into more than once, and it is really interesting, as you said, in the way that it seems to focus on a child who people, you know, as it says, fix the kid. The whole idea of someone that people feel need to be fixed, and they feel, you know, because it is a lot of times the way of society is, you know, wanting to fix people that don't fit into a box. So, well said there. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, it hits on that small town kid, you know, grown up with a particular, or maybe not just a small town, a small arena with depth of thought to, say, religion, and how one is supposed to behave and all that. And it doesn't fit in with the new angle that she's been thrust into, who moderates their ideals and ideas, who asks them to answer awkward questions, use their truthful answers against them. There's that notion of digging into something that really isn't your business and wondering what the problem is, what the issue. And then it was... she wait till she is gone and down the pills with something tasty slowly over time, gently go into night, let those other people subpoena you if they choose. After all, that's not being angry, is it? They can just let it go, can't they? There's a notion of no growth in that, because you're being twisted into something that of themselves that they want, and that's not who you are in the first place, and you don't want to be iterated into something else. because she hits on that sort of, what was it? I didn't ask for your, oh yeah, here it is. And one day I was singing a song that last ride back of them for their completed help that was never asked for.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And I like that you touch on the whole idea of people going into something that isn't necessarily their business, something that they don't necessarily need to fix. And you're right. Oftentimes, when people, as it says in here, after all, that's not being angry, that they just can't let go, can't say. You know, people really have trouble of letting go of things that they feel are their business, and especially when they haven't even been asked. I thought this was just a wonderful, thought-provoking light on the whole idea. And then I like, Rex, that you brought up the idea of it being a small arena, like a small town, a group of people who are very set in their ways as far as religion and guidance of how people are supposed to be. I really liked this all the way through, but I especially found a lot of strength in lines who tolerates the need to compete and show off, thinking they're illustrating or demonstrating vindictive or simply trying to impress. Impossible to tell. I like when people touch on a serious subject in an almost humorous and biting way. And also, I really like a green cross code with no backbone to ignore it. Wait till she, the one they say, ask her, she, wait till she is gone and down the pills or something. You know, I just, the whole idea of not having the backbone to do your own thing, I think this is just an excellent write and very well done. And up next, we have Cascading Hearts by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Come on, play with me. Are you willing to sacrifice, penetrate the night, cascading down sweet and hypnotic wicked sleep? Yours tantalizing, laying here helpless, erotic-driven lust, sweet. Clear flows nectar, frozen lost in time, sane or ravaged with madness, delicate rose bloom, taste my soul's magic, elevate your being high, levitate, surreal, eclipse me as art, fine, medieval in darkness, penetrate with light, sweet, innocent soul, golden hair falls as ribbons, fading, faint, so bright, dazzle me, fine star, unravel mysterious into universe, and poem. And that was just absolutely beautiful use of the imagery there, Betty. And Rex, your thoughts?
Kind of an invitation to the photographer to do with me as you will. Come on, play with me. I'm your willing sacrifice. Penetrate me nice. Go to the camera. You penetrate me with a lens, show me as you see. Laying here helpless, erotic driven lust, sweet clear flows nectar. Delves into a touch of a bit more erotic than the sublime. Takes my soul's magic, eclipses me as art. Find me medieval in darkness, penetrate with light. See the darkness within me, that medieval darkness, and offer up the light that you see within. It dances well within it and offers up an erotic angle as though there is a thought to exuding sensuality in the moment and offering up for the camera to see.
Absolutely. And I like that how you brought up how it's like that interaction between the photographer and the subject being photographed, and how the idea of the subject wanting to be seen exposed as the photographer sees them, but and also how you mentioned that it does really dance really well, as you said, that line of sensuality and eroticism.
So, great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, for once, the category of explicit made sense. I know she puts it in most of her hands. I thought this is very stimulating, certainly. Come on, play with me. I'm your willing sacrifice. Penetrate me nice. Cascading down sweet in the hypnotic and wicked sleep. Yours tantalizing, laying here helpless. Oh, my. Oh, yes, absolutely. Light the cigarette. Nice piece.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. Those were just really wonderfully seductive lines. I did like how there became almost a sense of something more than just the physical sensuality. Like the last stanzas, eclipse me as art, find medieval in darkness, penetrate me with light. It's interesting how the word penetrate can be used in two different parts of a poem and seem to have captured two different meanings. The act of lovemaking and then the whole idea of, you know, somebody whose light shines and in you and makes you, pulls you out of the darkness, makes you a better person. I just think this is a beautiful rite all the way through and very well done. And up next we have Alluring Jean Harlow by Nan 529. And Laurent, will you give that a refresh, please?
I will. Okay. Alluring Jean Harlow. Click of the camera image frozen in time, capturing the alluring Jean Harlow. In the age of Hollywood glamour, she certainly made the cut. All that is left is a memory infusion on paper, taken so young before the other chance of true stardom. Looking at this photo, her soul looked straight at my lens. Mysterious death, they said. It was kidney failure. Remembering a sweet kid, platinum blonde bombshell, only 26, fresh little starlet, way too young to die. Thinking of that day, nervously she asked me, would my mother approve? I start to recall. Headlines of 1936 announced Jean Harlow's death. It's all over the radio, Pepe News and cinemas, public post-mortem in the papers. She bleached her hair, inhaled fumes, or was it alcohol? Then again, was it a botched abortion? Hollywood shot for a day, churning out films. Little Jean was soon forgotten, clippings on the editor's floor. Yet I have her photograph captured for the world to see. Now I've made Jean immortal, hanging on the gallery wall. End poem.
Great read, Laurent, and what an excellent write from the perspective of the photographer that captured this image. I will say I'm not 100% sure if this is Jean Harlow or not. I should have actually looked up to see who this is an image of, but I could definitely, it does look a lot like Jean Harlow, and I like that Nan went in that direction. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it could very well be. I'm not sure. But I guess, as good a guess as anybody could make, because it does have, her hair was short like that, and she was athletic. She liked playing tennis, so that might be her at that. Anyway, I like the thought in this because she's walking it through Anne Ray's eyes. Now I've made Jean immortal, hanging on the gallery wall, even though she's gone so young at 26 years of age, with quite the the stunning thought as to everything back then. Oh, what you got? Well, there's this story, there's that story. There's this one over here. And yet nobody offers up the real truth, so to speak, except just more fumes and delivery for the glitz and glitterati to paint something ugly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I like that you mentioned that, you know, about it paints something ugly. And then how you mentioned that it's told from the perspective of Man Ray, and it has that sense of the photographer's pride of capturing the immortal image of the person, giving them that sense of immortality. I do know he did photograph a lot of famous people, but he also had, I believe, I don't know if it was a girlfriend or a wife or just a friend, but there was, and I don't know her name, but he did have a regular model that he used in a lot of his photographs. But that was an excellent comment there. And Lauren, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Jean Harlow was alluring. She had a face that I always wished I could see alive today to see how it would be different from the face then. So many of the pictures that we see have that unique 20s, 30s look. I mean, they don't look like they could change even if they were alive today, yet with modern makeup, hair, et cetera, et cetera. And who she was really brought out very nicely in this between her place in Hollywood, the way she was treated, the rumors that flashed all around her at her death, the way it was announced really worldwide. I remember Pathé News, believe it or not. Boy, that dates me. Somehow I remember it. But, yeah, no, nice piece. I liked it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, not only was this a great take on the prompt, but it was a wonderful tribute to Jean Harlow, a wonderful tribute to the gift that a photographer has to capture someone in life and keep them there within that, even after they have passed on. So I just thought this was excellent write and very well done. Yeah. Let's see what we got next. All right. Up next, we have All Days Seem Dead by Jim Bellamy. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yep. All Days Seem Dead by Jim Bellamy. All days seem dead. The moon is fed by her fear, as madness rends light from out of the sadness of the night. Our eunuch deeds seem endless, as softness summons up red rain. All days seem dead. The moon is ended by her tears. The swiftness of this mind knows no aim to its sliding sound, as fields of wheat are shended away from heaven, bread baked. All days seem dead. The moon is fed by her past loves, romantic sermons stuck or lost. Our eunuch deeds seem tended by births which darken life. The stars are shorn of gain. These golden fields hold grain, which whitened meadows fueled by harvest dourly rule, turning a petrol face to the enemy. Bonfires blast inside death's vein. All days seem dead. The waxen lips of leprous God, he posed but tooth and bleed and poem.
Great read there, Rex, and wonderful write, Jim. And Lawrence, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but this kind of speaks to a tendency towards catastrophe, almost. Of uselessness, of a useless life, of useless deeds. Our eunuch deeds, team tended by births which darken life, the stars are shorn of green. It's a little abstract. I love the phrasing. I love that line, the waxen lips of leprous God depose fled truth and bleed. That's really quite good, as is the poem.
Absolutely, absolutely. I found out something interesting the other day. I was watching a video on eunuchs in ancient China, and there was at one point, because at one point in ancient China, the best, oftentimes the best paying jobs went to eunuchs, because an emperor or a richer person would trust that a eunuch obviously wouldn't be doing anything with their wives, their harem. And so the eunuchs, oftentimes men would like purposely make themselves eunuchs, or family parents would make their sons eunuchs, knowing that there was a chance they would get a better paying job. And it became so redundant that they actually had to start setting laws and limitations, which obviously I think is a really good thing. Nothing to do with the poem, but just interesting fact.
Jesus, God almighty. Just think,
I know,
Rex would not have the deep voice he has today.
Right?
So
but he'd have a good paying job.
Why the boys were castrated. It's because they had voices and they wanted to keep that contralto voice alive.
Yep.
Castrati.
Yep, exactly. Yep, yeah, I remember that too. So, yeah, it's interesting how poetry can make you think of little things that you learned and remembered. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, here, the eunuch deeds, so to speak, are not, it's a heavy metaphorical reference. The castration of deeds seem endless. There's a thought of their being useless in the moment. And he did it again with another, our eunuch deeds seem tended, as though we're actually trying to ingratiate ourselves with those, but they don't mark anything because Sandus walks within it no matter what. So the thought is, maybe one should actually move outside of that realm. Someone, as softness summons up red rain, the moon is ended by her tears. Witness of this mind knows no aim to its sliding sound. As fields of wheat are shended away from heaven, bread bakes. Endless days of the same thing. The moon is fed by past loves, romantic sermons, stuck or lost. And again, our eunuch deeds seem tended. Again, we're tending to that which we've got in our mind, and it's castrated thought, that which will never be, but are trying to hold on to something.
I like that. Yeah, like, it does work really well as a metaphor, as you said, for the whole idea of something that will never be. I really liked that. And I like the imagery of the moon is ended by her tears, swiftness of this mind knows no aim to its sliding sound. What else was there? There's just some strong imagery all the way through. These golden fields hold grain, which whitened meadows fueled by harvest dourly rule. A dower was a payment offered up, or am I thinking of a different one? Wasn't a dower a payment offered up for like a marriage contract?
No, that's a dowry. Dower is drab.
Oh, okay. So in other words, ruled without very much thought of emotion. Bonfires flash inside death's vein. All these seem dead. The waxen lips of leprous God disposed, fled truth and bled. I really like that whole visceral imagery and the whole idea of the waxen lips of a leprous God, almost as if the idea of God Himself is falling apart bit by bit. So really just wonderful, thought-provoking imagery and very well done.
All right. And we have My Feelings Are Conjoined Twins by Kay Heartless. And it goes like this. My feelings are conjoined twins connected to the pelvic region, prone to frequent unhinged, the angel and the heathen. My emotions are string split, a ripped cradle of a corset forgets when to suck in and when to quit, loosen and tighten a fickle faucet. Somewhere in the middle, I always give in, find a reason to bend, the lacy dress, a crinkly mess, my latest guest, a big conquest, braless bravado, backside aficionado, the short buzz of a lousy win, my libido and my linchpin, hands resist lacy nets, but the legs always open, two shiny silhouettes. Nothing's the risk of surgery. I'll keep my conjoined personality and poem. I really like the direction that she took that prompt. I noticed that seems to be one of the more popular prompts, and very cool, right? And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, that was cleverly drawn and artfully expressed with a touch of humor to finish out. And there was a couple of bits in here that fit right. A ripped cradle, of course, it forgets when to suck in and when to quit, loosen and tighten a fickle faucet. Ah, that was nice. And my latest guest, the big conquest, brawlers, bravado, backside aficionado, the short buzz of a lousy win. Nice touch of humor there. And then off of my libido is my linchpin. Taking note of both angles of self and walking the thought now. Nah, I'd rather keep them. I might get into trouble, but it's well worth it.
Exactly. And you are right, Rex. This has had some great touches of humor. And, you know, I did like how she touched upon the idea of, you know, sometimes we wish we could take away parts of ourselves, but then we realize it just wouldn't be worth it. So well said there. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoy the openness and the apparent honesty in this. I mean, I think if you're going to write about something, you have to be able to imagine it, and she imagines it very, very well. Therefore, I think that it is probably personal to a certain degree. And when I was young, I used to dream of meeting a woman who thought like this, but I never did back then. I don't know why, but it's well laid out and spicy and inventive in its language. The prone to frequently unhinge, the angel and the heathen, is very nice. Somewhere in the middle, I always give in, find a reason to bend. And isn't that the truth? My libido is my linchpin. Hands resist lacy nets, but the legs always open, two Siamese silhouettes. It's very clever, very well written. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is clever. I like the humor within it. I like really brawlish bravado, backside aficionado, the short buzz of a lousy win. Like those wins where you wonder, are they even worth being called a win? So just an excellent write all the way through, and very well done. And let's see what we got next. I have to say, I'm just really happy with the poetry that we've gotten for this show. Just some
good
wonderful
stuff.
For sure. All right. Up next is Historian by Robert J. Teese. And Lawrence, will you give that a refresh, please?
I will do that. Histrion. You flow through motions, frame by frame, persistent vision, art house film, through scenes few viewers should construe. But even as you trance a lens, then improvise asides and lines, you still audition, must perform, bring dramas towards your inner stage where curtains neither fall nor rise. Applause cannot conclude an act, although a dream speaks loud, alive, before the spotlights. No retakes, no intermissions, interludes. There you remain in character, perfecting craft with every show, so often that I hope you know a time beyond that theater, when no one seeks the title role, and all the rest goes unrehearsed. End poem.
Great read there, Laurent. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, it goes through a couple of ideas I hit earlier, frame by frame, but that's what also hits on that the superimposed image. It's locked and loaded strictly in that frame, and one can draw much from it. But even as you trance the lens, then improvise the sides and lines, you still audition, must perform. That gives up the image itself. And you hit on the sort of inner stage, that was nice, that where curtains neither fall nor rise, because the image is on full display all the time. And applause will never conclude the act, because in the moment it is a picture that cannot be concluded to one way or another, except for the image that is exposed itself. And the thought of all the rest goes unrehearsed kind of hits on that notion of something in the moment can be captured, and which can then be conjoined with another to offer up a singular image, which can't, which brings out that notion that that was never rehearsed. It's just this picture and this picture walking down the frame values as they're being developed, give an idea that sparks imagination to offer up a new picture, which would not have been on the original roll to begin with.
I like that thought, you know, offering up a new picture that would not have been on the original roll. And yeah, that, you know, I like how this captures that kind of, as you mentioned, the exposure. So, excellent comment. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm tempted to look at this in a variety of ways, actually, because it's kind of open to interpretation. But I like the idea of really what Rex said about it, and the fact that, you know, we play roles all through our lives. Sometimes it's nice not to have to play a role, or you're in love with someone who literally is connected to the life of the theater, and you're kind of on the outside, and you're just waiting for that day when that person will be more yours than the theater or the headlights, et cetera. So that's another way of looking at it, perhaps. I'm not sure if the individual is not even talking to himself, the poet, and looking at the way they live their life. It's an interesting piece that opens a lot of doors. I liked it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does. You're right. It does kind of open up a lot of different thoughts. I really like this all the way through, but especially although a dream speaks loud, alive before the spotlight, no retakes, no intermissions, interludes. I like the whole idea of no retakes, and I, you know, the thought of you don't get any do-overs. And there you remain in character, perfecting craft with every show so often that I hope you know a time beyond the theater. I really like the idea of I hope you know a time beyond that theater. And the idea that it works well literally as almost as a storyline, but it also works well metaphorically. And the whole idea of, you know, to me, I hope you get the chance to actually stop putting on a show, you know, and like putting on that mask for people and letting people know, you know, who you truly are. So, excellent write and very well done. And all right. Up next, we have A Mask for Life by Mike L. Ancieso. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Mm.
A Mask for Life by Mark L. Anfioso. Starting as a child, we're told how to feel. Love, fear and hate, all part of the deal. Frolicking in the playground without a care. It's already happening. We're just unaware. It's often with the best intention, done subtly and without mention, that there's another way to be, a way where your thoughts are free. It's all done. We're a perfect imitation, set in stone, no time for revisitation. Get yourself ready for work. Prepare. You know it's more than just fixing hair. It's natural, and we do it every day thus. Don the mask that's been made for us. And pump.
Great beat there, Rex. And Lauren, your thoughts?
The masks people wear, the masks we all wear, we get so used to it. We almost do it without thinking. And we do it, I think, to maintain peace with others to a certain degree, or to cover the way we feel or the way we think other people should feel about us. I'm not sure if this is exactly a sonnet. It looks like one. I like it. It's nice. It's nicely done. Don the mask that's been made for us, fashioned by life.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm trying to see. It does very much look like a sonnet. It might be more of a modern sonnet than a classic one. But it does seem to have that rhyme pattern, and looks, I'm not counting syllables exactly, but it looks pretty close. Yeah, absolutely great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I took that picture of the girl with a face on a desk holding that mask up with the chin sitting on the desk and the hand at the top of the mask for balance. So that was the draw on this. That third stanza kind of hits it. It's all done. We're a perfect imitation, set in stone. No time for revisitation. Get yourself ready for work. Prepare. You know it's more than just fixing hair. That kind of hits that picture right there with the wholeness of the thought. Then it's natural. We do it every day. Thus, on the mask that's been made for us. And that might that can reference anything in life. And this, the model, so to speak, offering up that perfect outline and the thought that goes with it, but drawn from the day we're born, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah, he did do a really good job of drawing from his chosen prompt. I really liked this all the way through, but especially that second stanza. It's often with the best intention done subtly and without mention. No, but I should mention, you know, like I feel like, you know, I like that second stanza, the way it flows and the way it expands on the first one, but it really is actually difficult to separate the two because the both of those, and in fact, that the whole right really touches on the whole idea of how, you know, we are taught at a young age how we're supposed to feel, how we're supposed to act, what's acceptable and what isn't. And it's often done with good intentions. I like how it has that kind of, like, that realm of reality where that, you know, getting ready for life is more than just fixing your hair. So just an excellent night and very well done. And we have The Denouncement of Pluto by Mandy 42, and it goes like this. Crush me like a million vanilla rocks on the downcast face of planets, and the space is astronomical. Pull a thread of stars, red, white, blue, a sprinkle over my clavicle for a dusting on your breastplate. A reaction might equal an opposite is reacting under the navy of a twinkling canvas, Martians in gravity. An
every parallel not yet known to man burns me like a robot globe, amber-tailed, warping to ethereal nodes. Your space station moves with methods around the deep night of my cosmos, playing the bulb of my aha moment. And no other planet could tilt my orbit from the edge of the solar system. You are king of the Kuiper Belt. How many patterns will you walk in my silver moon soil before we can share the photosphere of the sun and poem? I tell you, she just is absolutely wonderful with the creative use of imagery and metaphors. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, there's a different thought to sensuality. A sprinkle of full of thread of stars, red, white, blue, a sprinkle of my clavicle for dusting on your breastplate, Martian thin gravity. Then there was one, oh, here it is. Your space station moves with method around the deep night of my cosmos, lighting the bulb of my aha moment. And I better stop there before I use it all.
Right. Oh, I know. There's so much to easily delve into. So, well said there, Rex. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love this piece. This is clever in the extreme to use the context of outer space to write within. And I thought the imagery was pretty phenomenal. And accurate, well written, had all the elements in it that I like when I read poetry. Well done.
Oh, absolutely! Great comments, both of you. Yeah, I'm a big fan of her poetry and her creative use of imagery, and I like the line lighting the bulb, my aha moment. And no other planet could tilt my orbit from the edge of the solar system. You're king of the Kuiper Belt. So just an excellent take on this prompt and very well done. And let me see, what was I going to grab next? Aha, here we go. I think we will end up having a few carryovers for our next break on through show. Which that's all right, because it just means that we've got some wonderful amount of responses. So up next, we have Masks of Man by Sandy G. And Lauren, will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. Excuse me. Masks of Man. When statements are left unclarified, masks of man are scaled aside to throw their truth inside, for truth within their darkness hides. Mistaking urgent needs, satisfying selfish schemes, darkness inhales their guilt and rattles heavy chains, expels angst in fetid breaths, ghosting at a fortress gate, nudging all the truths inside. Building masks to hide behind disruption, disquietude, and dismay. Break the last of false resolve until new masks are slid in place. Relationships dissolve. End poem.
Great read there, Lauren. I have to say I really like this poem, and I appreciate that Sandy G has been writing for our contests and our shows. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
It's that unclarified and the separation of it up in the first stanza that hits the tone of the piece itself. Unclarified. It's a sort of it being heavily veiled, elusive, and that guides the rest of the piece itself. Mistaking urgent needs, satisfying self-esteem, darkness inhales their guilt. A rattle heavy chain. It walks on that sort of how things quickly dissipate, remove themselves, and die in the moment because things don't get said or don't get said the right way.
Absolutely. You're right. The opening line does set the tone, and it all leads up to the whole idea of how easily things can fall apart when communication is done wrong. So excellent comment and observation there. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Sometimes I think there might be no mask, that what they are is who you're getting. But even in the best of relationships, I think you wear masks, but, you know, they don't slip and slide off your face. Sometimes they do, and new masks are indeed necessary, as this poem so well says. I liked it a lot.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I really like it. I really like this one, too. I like the opening line when statements are left unclarified and the way it leads in so well into the rest of the poem. And there's some wonderful emotive and visceral imagery, especially with expelled angst and fetid breaths, ghosting at a fortress gate, nudging all the truths inside. The whole idea of that kind of collapse of the fortress. So excellent writing, very well done. And up next we have an author of my poetic creations. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
An Offset Smile by Poetic Creation. On polyhedron planes, all angles are the same, but every window is another facet of life. Where darkness is bright, just warm and bright, in one love leads to our ultimate destruction, and in another time splits backwards to begin again, and another ending ends up becoming a beginning. Upside down is right side up, and right side up is precarious, like a Harry Carey maneuver. Except that there never is an end. On sharp angles we are torn, only to be born and reborn. I died more than once before, but the lady in red was scorned. She turned shards into pieces and pieces into more peace, only to reconstruct me again, the sandcastle on the beach, where waves of time forever lap to erode my confident existence. But only in turmoil can I truly see how can you know about freedom. If you've never been held in captivity, so she held me captive and tortured me to allow me to tear into reality and accept me for being built imperfectly. And boom.
Great reflex. Excellent, right, PC? I'm glad you were inspired. And Laurent, your thoughts?
PC was inspired. This is a great piece. The observation that a window is another facet of life and then beginning to lead us through all the different ones is like being led through a number of parallel universes. They all live right next to each other, and perhaps in each one, one character has darkness being bright, just warm and right, and in another one, love leads to our ultimate destruction. But obviously it's the things she puts him through, the upside-downness of a relationship. She turns shards into pieces and pieces into more peace, only to reconstruct me again as a sandcastle on the beach. You can be held emotionally captive sometimes, never able to break free. But now that you've known that kind of captivity, you know what real freedom is. Even if you don't like yourself, you can settle. Some people won't. Others will. That's the best I got this time of night. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I totally, but I like what you had to say about the whole idea of, you know, finding that freedom but appreciating it more because of the captivity. Excellent comment. And you're right, this is just an absolutely great piece. And Rex, your thoughts?
The polyhedron planes, every window is another facet of life. And considering what polyhedrons are, you get you got many windows, many facets to gaze through, and they offer up what you see. I like the angle drawn in here. Upside down is right side up, and right side up is precarious, like a Harry Carey maneuver, except there never is an end. And on sharp angles, we are torn, only to be born and reborn. I died more than once before the lady in red was scorned, but the lady in red was scorned. It could be a thought to self, reconstruction and deconstruction of self. And finally, at the bottom, to allow me to turn to reality and accept me for being imperfectly built. So it's offering up the she, the thought of looking through someone else's eyes to determine himself, so to speak. But it might be the angle is himself to begin with, and the reconstruction, deconstruction is trying to find that better sense of self.
I like that. I like that. The whole idea of, as you said, the reconstruction, deconstruction, in order to find that better sense of self. I thought that was really well said there, Rex. I did like his use of the geometry, the polyhedron planes, they were all angles are the same, but every window is another facet of life, a way we can see life in so many different ways. And I also liked, on sharp angles we are torn, only be born and reborn. I died more than once before, playing red with scorn, to turn shards into pieces and pieces into more peace. The whole idea that from our broken pieces, when we gather them together, we can find that whole self. I just think this is a wonderful, thoughtful write all the way through. And very well done. And I'm not going to try to rush through another poem because we don't have a whole lot of time left. So, Rex, tell us what you got going on Sunday.
Jazz fusion.
Oh, I like that. Very cool. And still plenty of room in the contest, so make sure to check it out, people. Also, join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And make sure to check out the contest and the topic board that our hosts and hostesses have going on. There is always something for everyone's taste. And I myself have about, I think, 4 or 5 contests open for various shows. And of course, to Kel and Lawrence, thank you for calling in and sharing your voices with us and your time. We appreciate you both. And thank you, Rex, as always, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And have a good night, everyone.
All right, gang.